It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. We have several guests on today's show. First, we talk with Miriam Medavaya, the project coordinator for the Alaska Long Trail. She and I talk about the vision for this to be a multi-braid trail system that has sections for a variety of different uses beyond just hiking, some of the challenges this project has faced, and what we can learn from other long trails across the world as far as minimizing the impact on surrounding lands. Currently, the Long Trail project is undergoing a feasibility study to become a national scenic trail. You'll hear from Zach Million with BLM Alaska about what exactly a national scenic trail is, what the designation process involves, as well as how this impacts the management of the trail. Later in the show, you'll hear some trail updates about the Iditarod Historic National Trail Southern Trek from Will Brennan with the U.S. Forest Service. This section of the trail is one of the most complete sections of the Long Trail and has undergone a lot of improvements in the past few years. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. My guest today is Miriam Medavaya. She is the project coordinator for the Alaska Long Trail Project. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. Can you just tell us a quick overview of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thank you, Martha. Thanks for having me today. So again, my name is Miriam Medavaya. Alaska Trails is a statewide nonprofit based in Anchorage. And we work with land management partners on building and maintaining trails, mostly in South Central Alaska. And we also advocate for more funding for trails in the state of Alaska. And we work with partners to plan and advocate for trail projects around the state.
So Alaska seems like obviously the perfect place for a long trail because we have a lot of land to connect by trails. Why don't we have one yet?
Right. That's what started this project in the first place about 3 years ago. Actually, to be honest, the idea of a long trail in Alaska has been around for a couple of decades, and different ideas for a route has been bouncing around. One of the ideas was following the Trans-Alaska pipeline from Valdez to Fairbanks. And that idea met with quite a bit of issues, including liability, but also it's far away from communities. So, and the goal for the current concept that originated about 3 years ago, the current concept is aiming to connect small and large communities along the route and boost the economy of those communities, bring more business, more economic opportunities, more jobs, and tax revenue to those communities.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, again, Alaska seems like the perfect place for one of those. I've also, a lot of people think of the Iditarod Trail when they think of like a long trail that goes through Alaska. And I do know that the beginning of this project, like the first from Seward through Anchorage, maybe follows the historic Iditarod route, perhaps farther than that. Why wasn't the Iditarod Trail necessarily one of the proposed routes for this?
Right. So in fact, a portion of the Iditarod National Historic Trail is part of the Alaska Long Trail route. The southern portion is called Southern Trek of the INHT from Seward to Girdwood is part of the Alaska Long Trail concept, the current concept. Why the portion north from let's say Eagle River to Nome is not part of that route is because most of the Iditarod National Historic Trail in that section is going through wetlands and marshlands, so it's only travelable if that's a word, during the winter months. So that's why the, yeah, that's how it was used also in the, you know, in the early days, 100 something years ago, right? Yeah. So that was a winter route. So that's why most of the Iditarod Trail is not part of the Lawn Trail in the current concept.
That makes sense. You got to have something that you can use year round if you're going to try to get people on board with doing this kind of a thing.
And we're aiming for this project to be a year round, a year round use and a variety of uses.
Yeah. I kind of want to talk about that a little bit next. So you talked a little bit about how this project came to be. I think I first heard about it in 2020. Is that kind of when people first started really noodling on the idea?
Yeah.
And then a lot of the long trails in the US, at least, are hiking only trails. The one that always comes to mind for me is the Pacific Crest Trail, but it's really clear on the website for the long trail of Alaska Long Trail that having it as a multi-use trail is important. Can you talk about why that's important to this project and kind of how that's going to be accommodated? Because I know there's a lot that goes into a multi-use trail versus a just hiking trail.
Yeah. Thank you for that question. So we're in Alaska. Alaska is different than most of the states, right? I mean, all the states in the lower 48. We have a different outlook on outdoor recreation. In Alaska, we have a lot of different types of uses here and a lot of users who recreate differently than in other parts of the country. So we want this trail to be Alaskan trail. And that means incorporating the many uses, many, many different outdoor recreation, variety of outdoor recreation that Alaskans like to engage in. So and that includes snow machines, that includes ATVs, horse riding, skiing, biking, you know, and hiking, obviously. So so the idea for the Lawn Trail is, for this particular Alaska Lawn Trail, is to be a braided system of trails. So it's not going to be just one continuous route, but it will incorporate segments that will parallel each other, and some segments will incorporate one use or a couple of uses, and some other segments that parallel those segments will incorporate other use. For example, in the Matsu, in Matsuboro, we're looking at the snow machine route in the winter, incorporating that route into the Lawn Trail system. And that route is Susitna Valley Winter Trail. It's a combination of different trails and maintained by snow machine groups in the valley, snow machine clubs. And that could be a winter route, but it wouldn't be a hiking route because in the summer, this segment is not usable because, again, it's kind of like the Iditarod National Historic Trail. It goes through wetlands and rivers and streams. So we need to come up with a different hiking summer route, and we're working on that between Palmer and Talkeetna. That route is still in the works. So that's an example.
So it seems, from what I can gather in general, most of the public of Alaska seems to be pretty supportive of this project. But obviously, you know, all of these things have two sides to them, and I'm sure it's faced some criticism. Can you talk a little bit about the criticism that you faced and what you've heard from people who think that this is not the thing to be doing?
Yeah. As you mentioned, the support is pretty much, it's actually very surprising how much support and how much momentum the project has gotten in the past 3 years. And we are very thrilled to see the amount of support and interest on, you know, both sides of the political divide as well, which is exciting. And I think people see the value of expanding access to outdoor recreation and expanding outdoor recreation opportunities, both for Alaska residents and visitors to Alaska. And, you know, there is very little to not like about this, the idea of the Lawn Trail, But we have heard some concerns. Let me think. Most concerns that we've been hearing about is the backlog of maintenance that already exists on state parks trails, on maybe Forest Service trails as well. So can we spend money on new trails when we don't have enough consistent funding for maintenance of existing trails? And so that's a valid concern and valid question. We see this project, the Alaska Lone Trail Project, as the tide that rises all boats. And that means bringing attention of both state legislature and private funders, that outdoor recreation is an important driver for economy in our state. And also it's important for our communities. The COVID years showed the enormous interest in outdoor recreation from Alaska residents. So we see, so the tide that lifts all boats will also bring, we hope, funding for maintenance. And in recognition of the importance of outdoor recreation and all this outdoor recreation opportunities that we have in our state. So that is how we hope to bring more funding for all existing projects and future projects in
the
state.
Yeah, and I think the support for the general support for this project shows that, like, we certainly have a lot of trails here. But
yes,
the amount of the wilderness in Alaska, what part of the thing that's great about it is it's relatively inaccessible, but also we would like it to, some of us would like it to be more accessible because, you know, it's hard to experience. You go other places and you can hike on a trail pretty much anywhere. And here you really have to search out those opportunities a little bit more carefully. So I do think that this shows how excited Alaskans are for that access. And some of the gaps in what's, you know, in the existing trail systems, you know, about, especially between the sewer to Eagle River portion is kind of the part that has gotten most of the publicity in, from what I can understand recently. And it seems like that's not only a big challenge, but also shows how many gaps that, you know, how many gaps there are in the existing trail system in places where it would be relatively easy to connect those.
Exactly. So maybe I haven't given the overview of what we mean by the Alaska Lone Trail yet. Can I just give?
Oh, sure. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So, so Alaska Lone Trail is a work in progress project to connect more than 500 miles of trail segments between Seward and Fairbanks, incorporating a variety of use that Alaskans engage in Alaska, in outdoor recreation in Alaska. And that includes some segments that will incorporate snow machine use, some segments that will incorporate biking and skiing and horse riding. And while boosting the economy of small and large communities along the way.
Perfect. Kind of talking a little bit about how, so there is, as you said, about 25% of this trail still already exists, and there's 75% of it that needs to be built. There's been a lot of work, as far as I know, done on the Iditarod Trail recently in the past couple of years. Like, some bridges have been built to connect pieces of trail that were not easily accessible or easily connectable recently. Can you talk about kind of how some of these smaller projects are involved, like some of the smaller projects that need to be planned in order to make the bigger thing fit all together? Because when I think of it as like one giant project, right, that you're going to start at the beginning and you're going to go to the end, but that's not at all how it works.
Right. So we are definitely chipping away small steps. Yes, it's important to have the grand vision where we're going, the vision of the long continuous trail system. But in order to get there, we do need to focus on small projects and fill in the gaps when we can. And also, all these small projects, the missing bridges, the missing little trail segments. They are important for the local communities and local users. So they have benefits on their own, whether or not they're part of the Alaska Long Trail system or not. We have been with our partners, Alaska Trails and Alaska Long Trail Partners, which is a coalition of different agencies and government bodies and nonprofits along the route between Seward and Fairbanks. We have been working on identifying shovel-ready projects to fill in the gaps, and planning-ready projects also to fill in the gaps in the system. And we're really focused on finishing the kind of the low-hanging fruit, which is the section between Seward and Eagle River, because that trail segment is mostly complete, but there are some really small, relatively small segments of trails and missing bridges on the Kenai Peninsula, on the southern track of Iditarod National Historic Trail going through the National Forest, the Chukchi National Forest. And the Forest Service has been very active and engaged in filling in those gaps. They're also very much invested and interested in making that segment complete, and girdwood in this case. We've had quite a bit of luck and good fortune, I guess, to receive funding from the state capital budget in the past 2 years as well, to fill in the gaps in the trail system there. So I would say within the next 5 years, we'll have a complete trail system between Eagle River and Seward.
That's
and
great.
Work is to connect Eagle River to the Matsu. There's planning funding that has been received through the state capital budget. And we're looking north to figure out the routes as well.
Yeah. I've really certainly enjoyed the work that's been done on the portion of trails between Seward and Girdwood. That's been a really fun thing to explore in the last couple of years. And I feel fortunate that that's happened so far. And if that's kind of a preview of how this whole project is going to go, I'm certainly looking forward to that, because it's fun to have more options, more recreation options that are relatively easily accessible for most people. What are some of the biggest challenges to making this happen? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. It's a big state. There's a lot of stuff that goes into things like this. What are some of the biggest challenges that you guys have faced?
Of course, the big challenge is the funding. Yeah. Of course. This is not a small project. So we have already raised over $17 million for capital project for construction and planning of the missing segments of the bridges and gaps and connections. But this is the beginning. So we envision the need for tens of millions of dollars in the next decade to complete the route. So funding aside, another challenge is the availability of workforce, trail crews, and trail building companies. In Alaska, in South Central, we have two or three trails companies that plan and survey and build trails, and they are usually booked a couple of seasons in advance. So that is a real issue. And if anybody listening here has inspirations of starting a trail building company, there's a market. So yeah, we would like to encourage entrepreneurship in this area, which is also another
So kind of circling back to the tourism aspect and bringing more people to the state, with the accessibility of some of these pieces of trail. I mean, we know that Alaska gets a huge chunk of income from tourism. And as we've seen in places like Southeast Alaska, increasing numbers of passengers from cruise ships have created some challenge. And maybe we know that more isn't necessarily better, but how can we balance this desire to increase the access or attract more people to the state without having it create more of a problem with something like the Long Trail?
Yeah. So the long trails around the world, if you look at who gets excited and attracted to the Long Trails, it's usually folks who are conscientious about their impacts, and you know, it's kind of maybe a stereotype, but it's not going to be buses of folks, you know, stomping around the trails. Probably not. I think, well, that said, you know, hiking is the fastest growing activity amongst cruise ship visitors and also independent visitors to Alaska. So that interest has been on the rise. And but typically, you know, people come to enjoy trails and they like their solitude. And so it's, we hope that by expanding access and providing new outdoor recreation opportunities connected to the Long Trail, we will dilute the impact of tourism in high visitation areas like Glen Alps, for example, that is overrun by visitation. And we in Anchorage are in desperate need of different access to the Alpine, to Chugach State Park. So, and that work is also underway to provide, to figure out that access. But by creating new access and new trails, we hope to spread the goodness, right?
Yeah. And like you said, we're probably not going to face some of the same overcrowding issues that are dealt with up elsewhere. Like, I don't necessarily see the Alaska Long Trail becoming the next Pacific Crest Trail, but how can we learn from some of the other trails especially in the US, because I think those are probably most similar to what we will have here. How can we learn from the problems that they've had and create and do better for this project? Things like overcrowding, or impacts to the environmentally sensitive areas. Like, I know on the Pacific Crest Trail, there's been problems with people camping, you know, stomping down sensitive flora near the trail from camping. How can we make sure that that doesn't happen? Or how can we learn from what has happened in those areas and maybe do better to mitigate that here?
Yes, that's a great question. And I think that may be a concern based on the experience of other trails. And I think Alaska is a little different. And I want to point out that the trail is really geared towards Alaskans. So yes, we anticipate more interest from outside, from the travelers from outside, you know, from all over the world, but we don't think that the numbers will be that extreme. But to answer your question about how can we minimize the impact on the trails and the sensitive ecosystems, I think the important, what we're focusing on is making sure that every plan for new trails is designed with sustainable trail design in mind. And that's why we're that's the mission of the Alaska Trails, of my organization, to build sustainable trails. And also we work with the trail building companies in the state that also incorporate that. So it's very important to also avoid, you know, wetlands and be careful. And so we Alaska Trails are facilitating the project. We are not the ones who create land management policies. That is the job of the land management agencies. So So that means the state parks, or you know, the general state lands, so the mine land and water agency will need to come up with certain standards for their trails as well. The Forest Service and state parks already have them, those standards. So hopefully, you know, new trails will continue to be built with those standards in mind.
Do you, you kind of talked about this a little bit already, but what's sort of the timeline for this project? Again, it's obviously there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen and it's a lot of pieces that need to fall into place, but what's sort of your ideal timeline for this, to assuming you get all of the funding that you need and don't hit anything absolutely major, when do you anticipate this, how long do you anticipate this will take?
Yeah, I think we can optimistically plan or hope that the majority of the trail will be complete within the next 50 years. And possibly, so as I mentioned, some areas between, for example, Seward to Eagle River, likely will be complete within the next 5 years. And further north, that's a little bit of a, you know, I think seeing wait and see kind of scenario. And I want to also mention that some lawn trails in the lower 48 are still not complete, and people hike them, and they're well known. For example, the Appalachian Trail, right, the most well-known lawn trail in the U.S. Just celebrated their 100th anniversary, and they're still in the process of filling in gaps. People still hike on the roads to complete a segment. So, you know, I'm not saying we have to wait 100 years, but, you know, it's okay to have unfinished business, you know, along the way.
Yeah. You already also mentioned a little bit about if anybody wants to start a trail building company, that is definitely one way to get involved in this project. But how can people get involved in this project if they're interested in, you know, helping out? Maybe they can't contribute financially in any way, but what else can people do to help with this project or get involved in the process?
Yeah. So one big thing that people can do right now is to write to their legislators in support of the project. We have been successful in securing funds through the state capital budgets for the past 2 years for trail projects. And we're very grateful to the state legislature and the governor for including those projects in the capital budget. So we're hoping that this year we will have some success in securing funds through the state capital budget again. And we're submitting 22 projects for the Alaska Lawn Trail. And by we, I mean Alaska Trails and our coalition of partners. So there are projects in Denali Borough, there are projects in the Matsu Borough in Anchorage area. And all those projects will be a step forward to completing the trail. So you can go to our website, alaska-trails.org, and find the Alaska Lawn Trail page. And there's some information about which projects we're submitting, how to write the letters of support to legislators. It's pretty well described. So if you're interested in this kind of contribution, we would be grateful. The month of March is a great time to write those letters, because that's when the capital budget is being considered. The Alaska Lawn Trail is a good candidate to become a national scenic trail.
Mm. Yeah, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we are excited about it for a number of reasons. Okay, so let me just back up a little bit. So National Scenic Trail is a type of federal designation for a trail, and there are 11 other National Scenic Trails in the national trail system, including the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail and Continental Divide Trail and, you know, a few others. And we would like the Alaska Lawn Trail to join those ranks. And the benefits of that designation are, I see them as, at least twofold. First of all, it brings the attention and recognition of the trail on the national level and, you know, world wide level as well. So that of course is great. But besides the recognition and, you know, visibility, there's a funding source that is attached to such a designation. So that question about who is going to pay for maintenance and where does the maintenance money or building money or construction funds coming from? So that is an additional continuous source of funding that can go to towards the project. So we are excited about it. Thank you so much, Martha. It was a pleasure.
We're going to take a short break and we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer with your host, Martha Rosenstein.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. My guest for this segment is Will Brennan. Will is the Trail Program Manager and the Iditarod National Historic Trail Coordinator with the U.S. Forest Service. We are going to talk about some trail updates for the INHT Southern Trek. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Will.
Yeah, thanks, Martha.
So in the previous segment of this show, we talked about the Alaska Long Trail and the INHT, which is the Iditarod National Historic Trail, came up several times. Can you just give us a quick overview of what the INHT Southern Trek is so that folks know what that segment of trail is and what we're talking about here?
Yeah, sure. So folks have probably heard of the Iditarod Trail or even the Iditarod National Historic Trail, but the full trail is basically... you know, commemorates kind of the historic Gold Rush trails that were used during the Gold Rush era to get from Resurrection Bay and Seward, which was the northernmost ice-free port, up into interior Alaska. So basically, we're talking about a 2,000-plus-mile trail from Seward to Nome. And what the Forest Service refers to as the Southern Trek is basically everything south of Anchorage. So, you know, the most of the trail north of Anchorage is primarily a winter-only trail. The sled dog race that everyone's familiar with kind of follows some of that historic route. And then south of Anchorage, what had been the historic trail either lies on top of the Alaska Railroad or has since been subsumed by the Seward Highway. So there's about 180 miles of trail that the Forest Service has been working to create basically a parallel recreation route to that historic travel corridor. So yeah, we're basically looking, what we refer to as a Southern Trek basically goes from Seward up to Girdwood and Crow Pass, and then eventually points beyond into Eagle River.
Perfect. So there's been a lot of work done on this trail in the past few years. I was reading on the website that it became a priority area in 2018, I think. And I first discovered this trail section of trail or the section of trail between the north side of Turnagain Pass and Turnagain Pass in, I think, 2020. And it seems like there's been a lot of work done since then, as I've been using that trail more and more. So can you just talk about some of the major projects and improvements that have been happening to that section of the trail?
Sure. Yeah, there's been a lot of different projects that are related, but the last few years we've seen a lot more focus in this trail system, which has been great. You referenced 2018, it became a trail maintenance priority. So that priority area, so the 2016 Trail Stewardship Act directed the Secretary of Agriculture to set aside basically 15 trail networks across the country. And one of them was the INHT Southern Trek. So we've been trying to improve maintenance on the trail over the last handful of years in response to that. But then, a lot of the Southern Trek, it's, as I mentioned before, we're basically trying to construct a parallel route to the original historic travel corridor that was either where the highway or railroad is now. So it's incomplete. You know, there's segments that you can go for X amount of miles, and then you hit a dead end, you hit a creek or a canyon without a bridge. So we've been doing a lot of work in the last handful of years to try and fill those gaps and really finish the thing so that there's ultimately the goal is to have a continuous trail experience from Seward up to Girdwood and points beyond. We've been really focusing on construction in the last few years, and it's really just getting off the ground now. We had some work get started last year, and then more will continue in the next two, three, four summer seasons. So I'd say that the work that we're really doing now is really been stemmed through this big this Alaska Long Trail concept. I think as that concept was developed by our partners at Alaska Trails, it became kind of intuitive that one of the obvious places to start would be to kind of adopt the Southern Trek route or portions of it anyway, for that first bit to get you out of Seward and up towards Girdwood. So with that, our partners at Alaska Trails, they've been strong advocates for our work for years, but with the connection to the Long Trail, they've helped us secure some additional funding for us, which has been able to take some of these projects that had kind of been sitting on the back burner. Like we had done a lot of Southern Trek build out kind of around the 2010 era, right after the 2008 financial crisis. We had a increased funding in that time after the stimulus funds that came at that time, and we did a lot of construction then. But then the funding ran out and it sat on the back burner. And yeah, Alaska Trails really helped secure some funding for us that has allowed that work to continue. So yeah, we're psyched on that. And hoping to fill some of these gaps in the coming years.
Yeah. So currently you can, where are those gaps? I mean, I know I'm familiar with a few of them, but where are the gaps that in the trail, in the like actual trail that you can't go from Seward all the way to Girdwood yet?
Sure.
Where do those exist? Yeah. And what's the challenge in closing those gaps?
Sure. Yeah, there's a few key gaps. So basically, if you start in Seward now, you've got trail that gets you essentially to Kenai Lake, either by following a route from like Nash Road up through Bear Lake and beyond to Primrose. We've got Primrose Campground there, or then folks will also use Lost Lake Trail is, real popular one, and up and over to Primrose Campground again. And then from there, there's basically a gap through Moose Pass. We're working on plugging that gap now. There's some constructed trail through Moose Pass. It's like, you go a few miles where there's no trail, and then there are trail miles for a bit, and then again another gap. So we're working on plugging those gaps. So right now you can get there's connected trail from if folks are familiar with the area, there's I want to say about 5 miles of trail that connects from Ptarmigan Creek Campground up to just beyond Vaught Lake. So there's about 5 miles there. We're last summer some new trail construction kicked off that would basically bring that extend that trail further south. So That's happening in kind of the Victor Creek area, if folks are familiar. This is kind of just north of where the Seward Highway crosses Snow River there, to the south side of Kenai Lake. So a couple miles of trail got kicked off there last summer. We're hoping to continue that work this summer. And then let's see. So that's one kind of big functionality gap for us right there in the Moose Pass era. There's we've got, again, some miles that connect, others that don't. And then north of Moose Pass, people might be familiar with Johnson Pass Trail. So that'll be the way you continue north. Once you get past the community of Moose Pass, you'll get on Johnson Pass. That's 23 miles of existing trail. That's, you know, the historic Iditarod route in many ways. People have been traveling that for over 100 years. So that trail's in existence. We're working on doing some backlog deferred maintenance. Our trail crew last year did awesome work on the southernmost 6-7 miles, and they're going to continue that work this summer. But anyway, that gets you 23 miles up to Turnagain Pass. And then when you get to Turnagain Pass, there's a stretch of trail that exists. There's like 12 miles of trail that exists currently in the Turnagain Pass area. And that, let's see, so it's 12 miles of existing trail through Turnagain Pass. The southern 6 miles, which leads from the Johnson Pass trailhead, that has trail that was constructed about 10, 12 years ago. But unfortunately, at that time, the funds ran out before we were able to construct a series of 4 bridges. So you ask about what are some of the challenges. These bridges are a big challenge. You know, the Chugach National Forest, the terrain around here is such that there's, you know, we've got glaciers and ice field above the trail with major drainages, serious creeks to cross up and down. So these bridges are, you know, they're big, they can be expensive, they can be quite an engineering feat. So we're working on chipping away at those. All that being said, that stretch of trail that has, where the trail's been constructed but there's no bridges, we've secured funding again with the help of our partners to complete those 4 bridges. So that'll, you know, we'll be able to plug that gap. That'll get you to Center Ridge, which is like the top of Turnagain Pass. That's where, like, kind of again the top of the Turnagain Pass where a lot of the skiing and snow machining happens. And then you're on a nice completed trail that has really taken off in popularity in the last 3-4 years. I think it was 2020, we constructed 2 bridges, which made that piece functional. So you've got about 6 miles of trail there. That's if anyone hasn't done it yet, I encourage you to go check it out. It's one of our newer stretches of INHT that you can connect. That gets you through the northern half of Turnagain Pass, but not quite to sea level. This summer, we're real excited that we're going to continue the construction down to sea level. So that trail right now stops, for any skiers in the area might be familiar with the name of the Eddies Trailhead, or the Upper Ingram Trailhead is what the Forest Service calls it. But that's a few miles up the pass. The trail will be extended from there down to sea level. And we hope to have that construction done by the fall of 26, but that gets kicked off this summer, gets you an additional 5 miles down to sea level. And then, you know, there's currently a gap to Portage Valley. But if anyone's traveled south on the Seward Highway the last few years, you've seen a lot of highway construction. That part of that highway project involves a bike path on the shoulder of the trail. So there's going to be a 7-mile bike path that should be complete by the end of this next summer season. So
okay.
Yeah,
that's great.
That would be great. Yeah.
So that gets you to Portage.
Yep. So, and then beyond that, we're the last gap that we have is up the 20-mile valley.
Yeah.
That's kind of the crux of the project. That's going to be the most complex piece to build for sure. I think we all know that. We're working on trying to come up with a bit more of a design there and get a better understanding of how we're going to tackle that when the time comes. We don't have funding for that yet, so it's still a little bit of a back burner.
Yeah.
But once you get up 20 Mile Valley, we do have completed trail to the headwaters of 20 Mile Valley. Upper Winter Creek Trail spits you out there. That's a popular one for people that do the pack rafting trip, coming in from Girdwood up over Berry Pass and into Upper Winter Creek. You can drop down into 20 Mile and then use a pack raft to float back around to the Seward Highway. So people are using it for that reason, and it's just Berry Pass is a you know, stunning alpine zone, so it gets a lot of use there. But anyway, Upper Winter Creek Trail brings you into Girdwood, and then basically you can continue on to Winter Creek proper, and then that gets you onto Crow Creek Road and up and onto Crow Pass, and then you're off National Forest lands and get into the state park, and you know,
yeah,
just a hop, skip, and a jump to Fairbanks.
So it sounds like you've got like a quite. You've got a lot of work ahead of you, but you've also done a lot of work. So it seems like this is a really exciting project. And also, like, I'm looking forward to it being done. I'll probably never go all the way from Seward to Girdwood, but I think I'm excited about all of the kind of new possibilities of connecting bits of trail.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, the fact that it does parallel the Seward Highway allows for a lot of different ways to make use of the trail, to experience mm-hmm. the trail. You know, you certainly can, you know, when it's all said and done, you'll be able to, you know, go on your whatever 3-week hike or 1-week mountain bike ride, however you decide to do it, yeah. from Seward to Girdwood. But again, with it paralleling the highway, it's pretty easy to we've got trailheads up and down, and so it's easy to pick off a segment that you want to bite off on any given day.
Yeah.
So yeah, there'll be a lot of new options for folks.
That's great. What about people who want to get involved? Is there a way for the public to get involved in these projects and help out? What can people do if they're interested in helping?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, there's a few things folks can do at different levels. You know, first of all, you know, we're certainly interested in keeping the trails well maintained. So the easiest way to help with that is just let us know. Give a call to one of our ranger stations if you notice whatever, there's trees down across the trail, or there's you know, a washout that happened with you know, some winter rains or something like that. If you notice any sort of thing wrong with the trail, you know, let us know, and we'll put it on the to-do list to get out to and tackle it as we're able. But then otherwise, folks can also help doing some trail maintenance themselves. We work to organize volunteer parties every so often in the summertime. I'd say probably folks' best bet to get involved with that is to, again, tie in with Alaska Trails. Their Alaska Trail Stewards Program is great for that. And then otherwise, people can help support these greater efforts by, you know, by weighing in and letting us know what they're interested in. As we bite off new trail segments and, you know, propose new projects, it all goes through a public process. And as we, you know, put it out there for the public to weigh in, let us know, is this important to you? And if so, you know, it's more likely that it's something that we're going to pursue. As we're, you know, it all, you know, it does all cost money. And that's ultimately what it's going to take, is securing the funds to do these, what's ultimately a big infrastructure project. You know, so that's another way people can help, is just, you know, provide, you know, if you're part of a group that has some sort of relationship to the trail, we're always looking for letters of support when we're applying for grant funds. And, you know, we'll apply for funds through, you know, DOT available funds, that sort of thing. Like, there's often, you know, alternative transportation program grants available for, it's like a sliver of the gas tax. So when we go to apply for those kind of projects, those kind of funds to be able to build these types of projects and plug some of these gaps, you know, we're always looking for community members and groups that are willing to help support our efforts by providing a letter of support or something like that. So that's another good way that people can help in more of a background capacity.
Those are all great ideas. Thanks for sharing those. And thank you so much for taking the time to share these updates with me today. I hope that folks find this interesting.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. We hope to see you guys out there on the trail this summer.
Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Martha Rosenstein. In this segment, I'm speaking with Zach Million. Zach is the recreation program lead with BLM Alaska, and we are going to talk a little bit about the National Scenic Trail designation. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer, Zach.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First, can you just tell us what a National Scenic Trail is?
Sure. Yeah. So National Scenic Trails are one of the three types of trails established by the National Trail System Act of 1968. They basically are extended trails to provide for maximum outdoor recreation potential and for the conservation enjoyment of where the trail may pass. The other two types of trails identified in the National Trail System Act are National Historic Trails and National Recreation Trails. While National Recreation Trails can be established by secretaries of departments, such as the Secretary of the Interior or Secretary of the Agriculture, National Scenic or Historic Trails can only be established by Congress through enacting legislation.
Okay. And then, so kind of the overall topic for this show has been the Alaska Long Trail. So what would be the some of the benefits of such a designation for a trail like the Alaska Long Trail?
Well, a couple could include potential funding if this was directed and established by Congress. There could also be economic benefits realized from the designation, such as new tourism or related businesses. And then national trails also provide an opportunity for local communities to become involved in a national designation.
Okay. And we'll talk a little bit about, I have a question about that in just a minute, but what would be the process involved for getting this designation? I guess there is a feasibility study that needs to happen. So what does that process look like?
Okay. Yeah, so the feasibility study was assigned to the Bureau of Land Management in the fiscal year 2023 appropriations bill. And essentially, the feasibility studies are outlined in the National Trail System Act that have a total of 11 different criteria, two of which are related only to National Historic Trails. So for this proposal, since it is being proposed as a National Scenic Trail, we follow 9 different criteria. And that criteria is well outlined, which includes things like the amount of development needed, status of land ownership, maintenance plans for the proposed trail, and estimated expenditures related to long-term management. So like I said, Congress did assign this to us in the FY fiscal year 2023 funding bill. And per the terms of the National Trail System Act, we have 3 full fiscal years to complete it. So we anticipate having a report completed and ready to submit to Congress by the end of 2025.
And so then you submit that to Congress and Congress says yes or no, is there any back and forth, or is it just like all or nothing, either you get it or you don't and you have to try again?
Well, I'm not exactly certain once we submit it to Congress if there will be questions that come back. But it is important to note that only Congress can establish this through subsequent legislation.
Okay. And so you also said that the timeline, you have 3 fiscal years to complete this. So 2025, the end of 2020, fiscal year 2025, is that what you said?
Roughly the fall.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And then one thing that stuck out in what you mentioned about the criteria is the amount of development needed. And for something like the Long Trail, which seems to have a lot of there's a lot already in place, but a lot of development, does that make it more or less likely that this is going to happen if there needs to be more development versus something that's already more well-established? Do you have any insight on that?
Well, I'm not really certain if it will, which way it'll amount to the overall recommendation. But obviously, those are factors that the criteria takes into account, and that's the way it was written into the original National Trail System Act. I would expect that those are important things that Congress would look at to make the determination in the future.
Yeah. So one of the concerns that I've heard regarding the National Scenic Trail designation is that there is then federal oversight of the trail. So how does having this designation change the management of the trail, or does it really?
Okay, so if a trail were designated, The designation itself does not change any policy, but it can affect decision making in the future to support and protect the nature and purpose of the trail. So if the trail were established or, designated by Congress, then a comprehensive management plan would be developed, which works with other federal, state, local, indigenous communities and tribes and partners to formulate. The plan defines the future vision, the administration and management of the trail, and describes how the agency directed to manage it will work with partners overall for management.
So it's really a more collaborative agreement than it maybe sounds like when you say that there's federal oversight of the trail. It really takes into account all parties involved.
Absolutely. The National Trail System Act was very forward-looking in 1968 when it realized that the only way that these function, you know, with multiple land ownership is to work in a collaborative partner type environment.
Yeah, great. So what, this is an ongoing process. It's already started. If people are interested in maybe providing feedback or getting involved in this process, how can they do that? What can people do to be a part of this?
Sure. Well, so we have been doing outreach through our core stakeholder group. The legislation for the study directed us to work with an established group of people, which we have been doing. We've also been doing outreach for various private landowners, which are within a proximity of the proposed routes. We've been developing an email list that we can keep those people informed. But the best way overall, the one-stop place to go to is to go to BLM's e-planning NEPA page, which is eplanning.blm.gov. There's a big search bar that pulls up. Just type in Alaska Long Trail and then bookmark that page for the future. We will be announcing the public meetings, which are will be occurring within the first 2 weeks in April. We will be having 5 in-person public meetings ranging all the way from Seward to Fairbanks. And then following that, we've established a rough timeline this summer to host up to 3 virtual meetings for people that are unable to attend. So we'll be announcing that as well. We'll be putting out news releases and trying to capture as many people as we can. But again, the e-planning page is your best place to visit to keep up to date on progress.
Okay. I'll make sure that there are links to that on the page at alaskapublic.org. There's a page for this show. I'll make sure that there's links to that so people have an easy way to find that along with the information about public meetings, because that's something that I'm sure people would like to get involved with if they have feelings or thoughts or just want to get some more information.
Sure.
So that's all I've got for you today, Zach. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today about this.
All right. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
That's all for today's show. Thank you to my guests, Miriam, Zach, and Will. You can find more information about our guests and this show on the Outdoor Explorer page at alaskapublic.org. Thank you to our producer, Eric Bork, and from all of your hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thank you for listening, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.